Received $13.5 million of $57 million available in federal disaster recovery funding for public infrastructure projects. Interim City Manager David Bullock reminded the county commissioners during a Tuesday meeting that the county is actually in charge of stormwater management within city limits. Bullock also told them that St. Armand's has been neglected and is prone to flooding even during minor rain events. The county's new stormwater department will use the funding for St. Armand's to retrofit pump stations and generators, install tight check valves, and place permeable pavement in some locations. Other projects in the city that received funding include $3 million for the rebuilding of the McBean Boys and Girls Club in Newtown. Want to get out from under that blue tarp? Here's your chance. Manatee County low-income homeowners can apply for housing repair and replacement funding from the county. If you're low or very low income and own a single-family home in unincorporated Manatee County or in Palmetto, you have until January 9th to submit an entry form to the county's Community and Veterans Services Department. The Housing Rehabilitation Replacement Program provides zero interest, deferred payment, 20-year loans. Households impacted by last year's hurricanes will get priority. Hang on, the real estate roller coaster is headed down. Six of the top 10 metro areas in the United States seeing price drops for homes are in Florida. And the number one metro area is Sarasota, Bradenton, Northport, according to Realtor.com. It saw a steep 8.6% drop in November. At the same time, the status of Florida as a destination for people to move to is teetering. Through November this year, just a little more than half of the moves by moving giant Atlas Van Lines were inbound, the company said in its annual migrations pattern study. Some of it has to do with the affordability factor and fear of climate change, according to an Atlas executive. Just 3 years ago, 60% of Atlas Florida moves were inbound. This has been Johannes Werner with UWSLR News headlines for Thursday, December 18th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Ann Tunis, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR staff or volunteers. And programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2025-26 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. Well, today I'm a little bit breathless because there's so much to talk about. With me today is Ron Cashton, who many of you have heard if you're a regular listener. Ron is a retired CPA.
Yep.
He worked for the Go ahead. Yep,
an auditor at the Schubert Organization, and that's the organization that owns most of the New York City Broadway theaters.
Yes, and you have a lot of other. You were an auditor for hedge fund.
Yep.
Their CFO. You have an incredible portfolio of experience in finance, but it's that theater experience that's particularly relevant today.
Yes.
Why? When bad, foolish, unsupported, irresponsible projects die in Sarasota, you don't really get much of a post-mortem. They tend to go away with a whimper.
Yeah.
This particular effort to build a new performing arts hall, and I want to just preface this by, if we need a new performing arts hall or if we want another performing arts hall, that's fine. But the plan should be transparent and responsible and based on real information. Since 2014, there has been an effort to, under the Sarasota Performing Arts Center, SPAC acronym, which changed recently, but that's the one we all pretty much know. Since 2014, since the Bay was unveiled, the vision for taking the parking lot of the Van Wezel and turning it into a park, okay, which is a totally support that.
Wonderful.
Totally support that. Bayfront public parking is not the highest and best use of land. Absolutely. However, from the very beginning, for the first 8 years of the vision, quote unquote, there was no actual plan. There was just a rendering.
Right.
It was just a picture. And in 2022, an agreement was unveiled, and we're going to start there, between the city of Sarasota and this foundation.
Right.
Okay. There's so much here to talk about. And the reason I'm doing this show today is that from a civic awareness perspective, this is pretty much the poster child for what not to do with a big project.
Right.
Yeah. It never should have gotten this far. They had no business hiring an architect when they didn't have funding for a plan. This was a foreseeable train wreck. And somehow, if this is ever going to happen, it needs to change course entirely. But I think we need, as a city, to understand what happened here because, well, for one thing, we're going to have elections,
yep.
Right?
And so many warning signs. This was one, because particularly when you deal with public money.
Oh, my gosh.
It's such a large project.
Yeah, and we need city management that doesn't engage in this sort of subterfuge.
Yes.
This was known. Okay, so I'm going to start out. Okay, so for 8 years, this was a vision, right? It was a rendering from 2014 to 2022. People who wanted a new performing arts hall, they were leaders within the foundation, who set about trashing the Van Wezel. And the PR piece, so there's a PR piece, there's a facts piece, but the PR was the Van Wezel. The Van Wezel is past its useful life. That actually wasn't true, but that was the shtick that was put out there over and over again.
Right. And part of the reason why they did that is if you're going to spend $500 million, you've got to have a purpose. You've got to have a reason to tell the public why you're taking so much taxpayer funds.
Because that money can go to other things, right? There's an opportunity cost, and this is a basic thing for citizens to understand, and citizens know this intuitively. If you're paying for one thing, that's money that could go to other things.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Even including, just yesterday, a busload of St. Armand's residents and business people went down to the county for an existential crisis of trying to get funding just to keep their homes and businesses. So
because
when you talk about
flooding.
So when you talk about public funds, there is a zero sum pot there.
Yeah. And you have to be able to defend the use, and these dollars really should go to the highest and best use, to borrow from real estate. Okay. So this agreement came out, and this was in April of 2022.
Yep.
That it was actually signed. But The people that, frankly, are routinely diminished at City Hall are your neighbors who pay attention. And frankly, in the past, there's always been a history of respecting the citizens who pay attention because they are representing their neighbors, right? That's not the culture we have at City Hall. But in any event, the citizens who pay attention took one look at this agreement and knew it was garbage.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell us why.
Well, from my standpoint, when that agreement first came out in 22, they were discussing how to fund this. Mm-hmm. And the initial idea was we're going to fund it with surcharges on the tickets.
Yeah.
And this is where my experience with the Schubert Theater came in. I said, this is absurd. You're going to at least double the ticket prices. Thinking that this will give pause or maybe I don't understand the business plan behind it, I approached City Hall. And I thought that they'd be receptive for someone with facts, you know, with models, trying to gain some more information. But what surprised me, and I think this is one of the reasons why it really went off the rails, is rather than the city confront the issues before them and the realities necessary to build such a project, the city took a different tact. The city took, rather than acknowledging that we have these issues, they tried disinformation and tried to discredit any information that was counter to this.
So one of the biggest transgressions, right? And there's this phrase that I like, well begun is halfway done. This was not well begun, right? So in April of 2022, when the city commission met to approve an agreement between the city and SPAC and this foundation, there were many problems that we'll talk about, but one of the most egregious, maybe the most egregious, was that the agreement said that the Van Wezel was nearing the end of its useful life.
Right.
At that time, there was an engineering report which had been, you know, commissioned by the city that had been given to the city. It was not part of the background information. It certainly was relevant. It contradicted the agreement. And it was from Karen's Engineering, which basically said the Van Wezel is sound.
Right.
Here's the tune-up that it needs to the tune of about $1 million, more or less.
Yep.
And very important to understand from an asset point of view, it's like when you buy a new car, you're getting the value of the car at the end of its useful life. The more you can drive that car, the more you can put off having to buy a new one, you're benefiting financially. It's the same with a performing arts hall, which doesn't mean that you keep something that's falling apart. So, bottom line, that engineering report said this is nowhere near the end of its useful life. You can put about $1 million into the Van Wezel and it'll go for a number of years more, like a decade or more. And it was hidden from the commission. It was hidden from the public. It was not put in the background information. And the city manager at that time, Marlon Brown, has never explained why.
Yes. And what was interesting about that, because clearly he was wedded to a new hall. And we'll never know the motivation of why he privately had paid for, you know, through the city, paid for Karen's and kept it out of the public view. It was only during the campaign when Mark Smith, who is a county commissioner but also an architect, looked at the agreement, looked at what the city was doing, said this made no sense. We should have an engineering report before you ever enter into an agreement like that. Then Manager Brown thought, aha, I'll prove that we're doing everything right. Here is the engineering report that I've commissioned that no one has seen. But when you read the engineering report, it said the hall was fine. So then people started questioning, well, what are we doing here? And that's when it even fell apart further.
And people like, well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to be asking, how the heck is this report not in the background information? Is the city attorney and presumably the attorney for the foundation, how is the city permitting an agreement to be written which says this hall is at the end of its useful life when an engineering firm demonstrably shows that's not true? So, you know, we're going to be coming upon an election season where we may see the former city manager be making endorsements and getting involved. We may see a crowd of people asking, what about a new performing arts hall? And we must, as a community, understand it's like an exit interview for this project, what's going on.
Yes.
And we're having this discussion in the backdrop of a new ad for the Performing Arts Hall effort came out at the end of November.
Yep.
It was in the Herald Tribune, and it has, you know, the sparkly drawing, which by now we should all understand. A drawing is nice, but it really isn't a plan at all, right? So it should never happen that a city administrator keeps critical information from the public and critical information from the commission that was not even available to them during their decision process. I would call that malpractice. That is not how you run a city.
And it shows you the obstinate nature of just the thinking and really the myopic viewpoint. Because even 2 years later, after that embarrassment, there's an engineering report that says the building's fine, but I just haven't told everybody, but I've committed the city into an obligation that they may not want. In 2024, when the Purple Ribbon Committee was commissioning a full report.
And we should say the Purple Ribbon Committee was a group of citizens with some expertise in different arenas that were charged with looking at how to use the Van Wezel, because the original agreement forbade the Van Wezel from being used for performances.
Right.
So anyhow,
Purple Ribbon Committee, to some extent, was to placate the residents that were just asking for facts and were critical of the seeming misrepresentations that repeatedly coming out of City Hall. So in 2024, when they were commissioning the full Karen's report to do an in-depth review of everything from the structure and, you know, is there any water being entered into it? How's the foundation? Down to the theatrical equipment and what needs to replace and how well this is doing. Even at that time, the city manager and one of the commissioners were saying, we don't even need this because, you know, we don't really care about the Van Wezel, and we're just doing this to placate five individuals. That was the official viewpoint of city management as well as several of the commissioners.
Yeah.
So they didn't even want to, you know, they were about to spend $500 million, and they didn't want to do their due diligence.
No, and in fact, we're kind of making fun of those who were asking for due diligence. It's, you know, there's been some messages coming out of City Hall. One person wrote an open letter talking about the culture at City Hall, which is still not good for the people who work there. And, you know, the lack of commitment to reality, to the truth, and the willingness to engage in PR stunts or, you know, misdirected disinformation is a concern of so many of us who really are, you know, watching what's going on in local government. Getting back to that original agreement, Ron.
Yep.
one of the big issues was that all of the guarantees, all of the responsibility was heavily weighted on the city.
On the city.
And basically, if you live in the city, city taxpayers. And there was no, and there were a lot of assumptions being made financially that just weren't true. One of them was that there would be tax increment financing that would be available for this project. And the other was that that the foundation would pick up 50% of the project cost, where they had had 8 years to fundraise at that point.
Yep.
And had only come up, instead of, you know, $250 million is a lot of money. And we all know projects cost, have overruns, usually
right.
Cost overruns. They had only raised about 10 to 20 million.
Yes.
There was really no reason to believe they had the fundraising power to bring in 250 million. And yet the city went ahead and committed residents to this kind of expenditure.
Right. Well, and it was such, going back to that 22 agreement, it was really an agreement to both parties to do some work and come back with the answers to actually have a formal implementation agreement. So it was an agreement to make an agreement. And it's the foundation made commitments that by 2023, they would have all sorts of designs and cost estimates, and we could go into a formal implementation agreement. Well, clearly, they couldn't meet some of the realities that occurred with trying to plan this. So the city commission pushed it to 24. So we currently have, we have two agreements right now. We have one, which is this agreement to have an agreement where the foundation's commitments are over a year old, and this agreement hasn't been renewed. So one wonders whether this agreement is even operating.
That's why we're having a show. It's expired.
Right.
Right? It's expired. And it should be dead, dead, dead.
Well,
and any new agreement should be based on reality.
And what's unfortunate and a little alarming is when the foundation is going on these, what they call community conversations, they're including the seal of the city as part of that advertisement. And I know the city's very, very careful with what they endorse.
Mm-hmm.
And they try and only endorse city official events. So one wonders whether that logo and having city staff be a part of these conversations, whether that's misuse of public resources.
Yeah. There was an article that came out in the Observer. So you've got this 2022 agreement. There's no engineering report made of, there's an engineering report, let me rephrase, that is not made available to the city commission. It says the Van Wezel needs a tune-up.
Yep.
It doesn't say that it's in the end of its useful life by any stretch.
Nope.
Financially speaking, the responsible thing to do is to give it the tune-up and keep getting the value
right.
out of that asset.
Thing to interrupt there, too.
Sure.
When the original Karen's report came out, they mentioned that you should do some basic waterproofing, that you should do some basic resiliency on the building.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, city management was absolutely against doing any of that. One of the reasons why there was water in the Van Wezel during Milton was because the doors were never waterproof. They were never doing what they are doing now, is putting on the hurricane, you know, the more resilient doors.
Mm-hmm.
The prudent steps that if you own the building, if you had your home mm-hmm. at the side of the Van Wezel, you would have done this for your own homestead. So why doesn't the city protect?
Yeah. So they were told in like 2021, I believe, that Karen's yep. report was finished and not made available in April of 2022 to the city commission. They were told to waterproof. They chose not to waterproof. Before the 2024 storm season, they actually chose not to insure the building.
Yes.
Okay. So it seems like there's a plan to allow this useful building to die. And then we get the 2024 storms and, you know, no surprise, yeah. There's flooding. And now they're actually spending the money that they should have spent initially. Yeah. And I assume it's insured now.
Yep.
But it was some really foolish decision making. I just got to say, and, you know, when you've got a city manager who does not give you critical information,
yes.
Right?
How do you make good a decision? Decisions?
Well, my point is, there was no pushback from the commission.
None.
If you're working for the, who's working for who?
Yep.
Right? So I would love to see a city commission that actually read a city manager the riot act, which he richly deserved for not showing, you know, and providing that information. We didn't see it. And this is part of a bad culture at City Hall.
And so that showed up with later regrets. Now Mayor Debbie Trice, when she had realized for the architect agreement. So jumping ahead a little bit for the listeners, after the agreement that we were talking about, 2022, the city signed an architect agreement with Renzo Piano. And in that architect agreement, there was a clause that then chairman of the foundation, Jim Travers, and then city manager Marlon Brown had the ability to adjust the budget however they see fit. They're in total discretion. And
I'm just shaking my head.
But the thing was, when the commission was presented with this agreement, they didn't even have the complete agreement at the start of the agenda item. When they started discussing the agreement, so they were about to sign a $56 million contract. For the architect. They are handing out portions of the agreement then and there.
At the table.
So you would think, if you're a person about to sign a $50 million contract, wouldn't you say, I want to read this. Give me a day. I'm not signing something.
Or just say, we focus a lot. I focus a lot on process at City Hall, because when things are done, you know, in the right way, you get better outcomes. It's like a protocol, a medical protocol. You know, the same is true with, you know, contracts. You have to read it.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So why wasn't a city commissioner at that time saying, are you kidding me? You're handing me this right now? We can't vote on this. That's insane. Oh. For whatever reason, I don't know what kind of pixie dust is happening at City Hall, where you've got an administration and Dave Bullock's doing a great job. I don't think that's happening now. But you had an administration that basically the tail was wagging the dog.
Yes. And now the commissioners are having a much more critical eye. You know, getting back to Mayor Trice, she started questioning this. Where did this clause come in? I object to this. You know, I don't think that is a responsible way to shepherd such a massive project for the city.
Yeah. So, April 2022 agreement, obvious problems. They amend the agreement a year later. In 2024, they hire an architect when there are still so many questions about whether we need a hall, how we're going to pay for the hall. By this time, the county commission, we talked about tax increment financing money, was assumed that it would be available. But the county commission basically said, hey, we're not going to commit to that. We need this money for other things. How do you look people in the face whose homes are flooding when we've got sea level rise issues? So the county commission said, you can't count on us for that money.
Absolutely. And city manager was so out of touch. There's two steps in order to get TIF money. And when they were signing this architect agreement, the city manager approached this advisory board that's partially made up of the county commissioners. And at the time, he was asking for around $9 million. And the county commissioners balked at that very strenuously. You know, they wanted to know a business plan. They wanted to know a purpose. They thought a $9 million ask off the cuff was absolutely inappropriate.
Yeah.
But it shows, you know, how disconnected that is. Even down to this year, there was still an idea of, well, maybe the county would be up for this because county people use it. It's not just city people. So the city approached the county to say, you know, we just want to know one way or another because we hear that maybe you're on the fence. And it's not that the commissioners were on the fence. They were adamant that there is no way. Ron Kutzinger, who was also on this TIF board, advisory board, said, I thought I'd been quite clear that this is a hard no. You know, we've been very consistent from the start that we are not going to fund this. You know, the county has other priorities. They're still dealing with recovery from four hurricanes. You know, having a potentially vanity project in the city was not their priority.
No. Before that 2022 agreement in May of 2021, because the foundation and the city had gone to the state legislature asking for funding, right? They did go to the state first. Florida Tax Watch evaluates the asks, you know, the funding projects that come before the state legislature, and the Sarasota Performing Arts Hall at that time was given the award of budget turkey by the Florida Tax Watch. So you would think that kind of notoriety would have kind of put the brakes on on this project. And I'm just mentioning that, again, as another red flag along the way. But, Ron, I don't know that you completed your thought about the ticket surcharge, because theater tickets, Van Wezel tickets, are not easy for people to, for most Sarasota families to afford. They're expensive. What would the ticket price have? You did a very detailed analysis of what the real surcharge on a ticket would have been.
Yes.
What would it have cost?
It would have been well over $600 for just a couple to go to a touring Broadway show. And at some point, you're just pricing yourself out.
Yeah, so this basically was at least doubling ticket prices.
It was at least doubling ticket prices.
Okay.
Which, that's how I originally got involved with this, because the finance on the face of it didn't make sense. And then, of course, when I started looking whether you could use the TIF money to bond what they were doing, that also,
TIF,
just the math didn't work.
TIF is tax increment financing. That's the money that the county said, we're not going to give it to you. It's government money. It's your money, people. Don't let anybody tell you that it's not your money.
Yes.
Sometimes people treat it as some kind of a magic, you know, funding stream.
It's a portion of the property taxes for the area around the Bay Park. So the Quay and the Rosemary District and the Little Tahiti Park.
It's the increased value. Whatever tax revenue beyond a certain baseline is created by the development, then that money is put into a separate pot, and it's called tax increment financing.
Right. And for the audience, if you wonder, how can you have a $300 million, $400 million pot? The way that this TIF, this tax increment financing, works is you pick a baseline date. You pick a baseline year and any increment over that. Mm-hmm. The baseline they picked is when the Quay was just bare dirt.
When they demolished the Quay.
So there was nothing built. So anything built on the Quay, which
that would
arguably
have been like
is
2012, right?
Or
I think so.
Somewhere.
Well, anyway, you know, it was back a ways.
Yes.
It was at least a decade later. So this piece we've talked about, but again, should have been evident. It should have been more of a discussion at the city commission table that our market competes with Tampa and Fort Myers. We're sandwiched in between bigger theater markets. And so the top acts that these folks who were advocating for the SPAC and saying, we need a new performing arts hall, we need, instead of 1,800 seats, we need 2,500 seats, you know, a big jump in the number of seats, because they wanted to book bigger acts.
Yes.
But they failed to fully vet in the discussion. And it was particular, those who understand marketing and understand entertainment contracts, If you're performing at the Star Complex in Tampa, Stars, I think it's called, and you sign a contract, say you're Michael Bublé, I don't know, who's been at the Van Wezel, but I'm just using him as an example. There's typically a blackout clause, which basically says, I won't perform anywhere else within a 90-mile radius because the venue wants to be able to pull from that marketplace. And so, and same true with, like, Barbara Mann down in Fort Myers. So, it, you know, this idea, if you build more seats, they will come. You actually have to book the talent. And if the talent is going to a larger market, which they're going to do, they're not going to be able to be booked in Sarasota.
Right.
That market dynamic was completely ignored by the supporters of this project. And if something rises again, it that needs to be part of a real conversation.
Right. Well, yes, and you're absolutely right. The reason why they have those blackouts is they don't want nearby markets cannibalizing the potential sales that's going on in Tampa, which completely makes sense from a business standpoint. What it's so funny because this project, our, you know, the proposed Sarasota Performing Arts Center, got so contorted with trying to get around that fact that they decided rather than putting in what they proposed as the, you know, the 2,700 seats, we have to get larger. We have to get at least one seat larger than the Straz because then we'll be the big boy in town.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, we'll never have the population that Tampa has.
No.
So Tampa is a larger market.
Yeah, you have to deal with the reality of the market.
Yeah, the Bucks aren't, you know, going to play Ed Smith Stadium.
No, they're not. So when this agreement was signed back in April of 2022, and there were many people who said, what are you doing? This looks crazy to the city commission. One of the members of the foundation, in a very disrespectful email, made fun of those who raised very reasonable objections and called the meeting Kabuki Theater.
Yes.
I just want to use that to, as an opening to, you know, Ron, you and you've probably are one of the few people, Kelly Franklin, your wife, probably you've really tracked this. The PR that was put out in connection with this project, with the city, with the foundation working with the city. Can you just give people a sense of what the tone of their PR campaign had been and, you know, over time, what things that they did to kind of do this fake it till you make it thing?
Yes. Well, and it got very, very ugly. So rather than answering the questions that were posed, and I think they're very valid, how would you get around the blackout? How would you pay for this? Is the Van Wezel sturdy? How much money does it need to make it more resilient?
Are the ticket surcharges reasonable?
Are they reasonable?
Are you pricing yourself out of the market?
Where are we going to park?
Yeah,
all
parking
of those
is
things.
A whole thing we got to get
so,
to.
So what the tack that they took, rather than answering those questions, rather than confronting them, because the reality is you still have to confront, the city manager and the city commission at the time took the tact of calling all the people that were questioning it outright liars. And they put it out on an email with signed by the city manager, signed by then mayor Kyle Batty, signed by the foundation that said, we disagree with all of their assertions that the Van Wezel cannot be upgraded, that you should ignore everything that they're saying. Ignore this site. Ignore these people because they're lying to you. We'll tell you the truth. But when other people started asking the same questions we were, once again, they don't have the answers. So that fallacy started falling apart. But that
when
campaign...
When was that email?
Here you go. It goes back to 22, a little bit after this agreement.
Yeah, December 17th, 2022.
And they sent that out for months. That email went out repeatedly to the entire distribution list for the city. And then the foundation on their website also had, ignore these people. You know, going back to the Scooby-Doo reference, ignore those meddling kids.
Yeah. I think, you know, the foundation has a new leader, a new CEO, and it's got a new name, the Sarasota Performing Arts Foundation.
Yes, and part of that was interesting because they changed the name because the Van Wezel family was getting so upset with what the foundation was saying because, again, to try and get this new building, they kept on denigrating the hall and started to denigrate the family. So the Van Wezel family asked the foundation to stop doing that, and the foundation decided, rather than altering course, we'll change our name. And that is why.
How would that protect them somehow?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know, if nothing else, it's rebranding, and maybe the term SPAC had come to mean irresponsible, lack of, you know, evidence-based planning. And so they have a new name, the Sarasota Performing Arts Foundation. The CEO is Tanya Castroverde Moskalenko.
Yes.
She's a lovely person.
Yes.
I've met her. I've spoken with her. I've told her what the concerns of the community have been. She listened.
Yes.
And that was also a meeting with, it doesn't really matter. Right. So and there's a new rebranding here. We see it with a new advertisement.
Absolutely.
And I hope that it's also a new day in terms of being responsible with planning. Having a business plan, because they didn't, did they?
No, they didn't. And just to be clear, these hardball tactics, this adversarial stance isn't – Tanya wasn't a part of it. There's a new chairman of the foundation, Drayton Saunders, you know, replaced Jim Travers.
Travers wrote the Kabuki Theater comic.
Travers and Cheryl Mendelson. So just for the listeners to be clear, there are new leaders in the foundation, and I am hoping that they take a more realistic approach.
Yeah, more responsible approach. Okay. I want to wrap up engineering because there's a second engineering report that is now come out, because the first one was buried and wasn't followed, one in 2021, which would have just cost about $1.1 million to give the Van Wezel a tune-up. But, you know, maintenance delayed becomes more expensive. And now that maintenance, along with some upgrades, so to be fair, these are some upgrades, now for $17.25 million, the Karen's engineering firm estimated the costs of long-term maintenance at $17.25 million, which is a far sight better than, you know, the...
half a billion.
Exactly. So here's the thing. The main goal... Well, you go ahead and then I'm going
to... I was just going to say, to the city's credit, particularly after the multiple hurricanes last year, they did get grant money. And they are doing, in addition to the roughly $12 million that they had in the bank, that they could have done, there's resiliency.
The 1.1 back in 2021.
They are now doing some of this just prudent, responsible maintenance upgrade.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think everybody still agrees that the goal of converting surface parking into a park is a worthwhile goal. It is a goal that makes financial sense. It's a goal that makes, like, climate sense, because if with certain solutions. And one of the outrageously missing pieces in the plan. And you can see it in the original picture.
Yes.
Right? The original 2014-2015 rendering, which was not a plan. It was just a picture for 8 years. There was no plan.
A little
pink box. It was just a drawing, right? Yeah. There's no parking.
No parking.
So they eliminated the service parking, but then they ignore the reality that you need some parking.
Right.
I wrote a piece on this on my Substack column. If you look for the detail, Kathy Antunez Substack, and it was the purple elephant in the room.
Yes.
That this is about a year ago. I'm like, where is the plan for parking? It's never materialized. So all the big numbers, the $500 million number, didn't include planning for parking.
Yes.
Now, you had mentioned Kelly Strickland, the city finance director, was at the table saying something about the shortfall.
Right.
And it was, go ahead.
So at some point last year, the foundation's architect, Renzo Piano, had come out with very rough drawings and a very rough budget.
Mm-hmm. And they were pretty, though.
They were very pretty.
They're always pretty.
At that time, the city controller, Kelly Strickland, had to do some preliminary numbers.
Yeah.
And I think that's when it became to head, because she couldn't get the numbers to work. She said that there was a deficit of around $250 million, that the amount of money that the city was about to commit to, she had a gap of $250.
And that's assuming that the foundation came up with their piece.
Assuming the foundation got every dollar they needed.
Which they never demonstrated it could do.
And that it was on budget.
Yeah. And
yes.
So no cost overruns. Okay.
Yes.
So getting those numbers to work, you have to deal with parking. And I understand there's a whole school of thought out there. Well, people can walk and they'll take Ubers. But I'm sorry, you've got to be realistic. We need a reasonable parking lot or a building. You cannot build a tall parking facility because there's actually an easement agreement for the condominiums across the street. And this
right.
is also true with the Performing Arts Hall.
Absolutely.
You can't block their view.
Right.
That the city knows that. That's another thing that this initial agreement completely ignored.
Right.
What you could do is tuck parking. You can raise the profile,
right.
raise the land. You can put an underground parking lot.
Right.
You can, and on top of it, you can have park space. If nothing else, the thing that was ignored this whole time for more than a decade.
Yes.
The parking situation has been ignored.
Yes.
However, that was the original goal, was
right.
to make parkland. And that you could do.
Yes.
You could do.
And a shout out to A.G. Laffley, because the Bay Park Conservancy, that's the group.
Yeah, he's the leader.
He is the leader of that. And they're the private partnership that's working with the city to redesign and rebuild that entire park. He's come up with a working master plan revision. So he calls it, you know, I guess phase 3A, where he's doing just what you're referring to,
yeah.
is where that little sketch is of a building that realistically they couldn't build because the height would have prevented them. AG
and
is
the money.
Thinking,
and the money. Money and lots of things. Yeah.
AG has come up with some wonderful ideas of turning that into exactly what you said, underground parking, maybe putting a park on top of it. You could have some wonderful water features. Even the zealots of this performing arts center, like Commissioner Liz Alpert, was floored with what you could do with that land.
Oh, sure.
By keeping parking and doing just wonderful parkland.
Well, on top. And I have to say, like, Mr. Laffley came on my show, I don't know, 4 or 5, maybe 6 months ago. You can find that interview on YouTube. And just from a citizen perspective, that's what a real project sounds like.
Yes.
Okay? So there were two pieces contemporaneously being considered side by side. One was creating park space. Right?
Yes.
Making the most of the existing buildings, like the Garden Club. taking down Gee Whiz, which was controversial for a lot of people. But
yes,
because Gee Whiz was taken down, now you've got that phase one of the park, which a lot of people are enjoying. But they had a real plan. They
yes.
had a business plan. They actually raised money. And when you contrast the rhetoric and the discussion about the Bay Park and the, how that is actually reality versus the ill-advised, not taking into account, you know, engineering reports, all these all this disinformation, you've got such a lesson in what a real project looks like versus what the SPAC
Absolutely.
Foundation and the bullying of citizens.
Yes. And the
bullying
dichotomy
is horrible.
Yes, when you compare the two. And so going back to A.G. Lafley and what the Bay Park Conservancy is doing, universal support for everything that he's doing. Everyone's on board,
yeah.
even the county. They love the things he's doing. There's a historic fountain in front of the municipal auditorium. It's called the Hazard Fountain.
Okay.
And AG felt it was irresponsible. It would have cost too much money to repipe that and put it and fill
Somewhere
it through
else.
A water. So
yeah.
he's filled it as a planter. And it just shows you, here is a private foundation that is fully backed by the public, but they're working within their budget constraints. And they're trying to be responsible when it comes to public funds.
And they are. It's not like everything breaks the way some citizens want
yes.
it to. I know a lot of people are upset that Gee Whiz is gone.
Yep.
However, there's real conversation. There's real numbers. It's a responsible effort. Tell me about the Purple Ribbon Committee, kind of getting back to the original agreement actually required that the Van Wezel not be used for performances, that it
right.
could not be used for any shows or theater.
Well, so, it couldn't be used in any competing manner. So you were going to have two theaters, but one couldn't be used as a theater. So
yeah.
then the question became, well, what could it be
what
used?
What do you do with it?
It shows you the double talk.
Yeah. And so there was a Purple Ribbon Committee that was formed to study
yes.
and decide. But even that committee kind
yes.
of got co-opted by this unfortunate culture which traded in disinformation. And you saw that in their final report. Can
yes.
you tell me what about
right.
that?
Yes. There were several members of that Purple Ribbon Committee that had decided on the answer before they began. And one was Chair Charles Koestler, who was determined to prove that the Van Wezel was completely unusable and we need a new performing arts center. So from day one, that was his stance. The committee ultimately found that, indeed, the Van Wezel is fully operational and can be for the foreseeable future. You know, there's nothing preventing the Van Wezel from continuing on. But Chair Koestler, when the report was done, when everybody on that committee had voted on every aspect of it, when he presented that report to the city commission, he wrote a preface that none of the other members had seen. And on that preface were coarse, you know, wording implying that there's a problem here and we need to expedite its replacement. And what was amazing, so there was a moment in time where the Chair Koestler is presenting the report to the commission. And what happens with these advisory boards, all the commission has to do is accept it. So they're not doing any action. They're just accepting it.
Yeah.
But there was such confusion regarding this preface that the commission...
Because none of the other members
right,
of the committee approved
right.
it.
So one of the members, Selma Groker Wilson, came down to City Hall and was sitting at the dais where one of the commissioners asked her, after Charles Koestler said, no, everybody agreed to this.
Wow.
She was asked, did you vote on this? And she responded with one word, no.
Yeah.
So they were presenting a report that one of the members had told them
was approved by everyone when, in fact, it was not. Yeah. And to end on that note, it kind of encapsulates what's going on in our local government and how we need to demand better.
Yes.
We must have better.
Because
we must have truth.
Yes,
right?
Aspirational is fine.
Sure.
You can't be such a zealot that it becomes delusional.
Yeah.
That you disregard. Because reality, it's a funny thing.
Facts are stubborn things. As John Adams said, facts are stubborn things. We need to deal in facts. And the reality is all that money, all the staff time. Hiring an architect, they've spent $1 million on this architect for a plan that could never really happen.
Right.
You know?
And for the listeners, this isn't just staff's time.
Yeah.
Taxpayer money, over $1 million, has been spent on something we still don't have plans for.
Yeah. There's a way that people kind of get drunk on vision. Vision is great when it's real, when it's achievable, when you can, you know, when you can measure it, when you can achieve it. That's not what happened here. We need leadership that's grounded in reality. It's fine to have an aspirational vision, but you need, and that's what the Bay Park is.
Yes.
It's an aspirational vision that's coming into reality. We need leadership that has aspirational vision based on facts and reality, because other things won't get funded when we're wasting time on foolishness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I work with a couple of civic organizations that were dying to get pedestrian crossings on dangerous intersections. And the city already designed. They have no money for it.
And we actually do if we prioritize things differently.
Just responsible.
If we, So, Ron Cashton, thank you for joining me down this walk on memory lane. I think for me, it was important to do this kind of exit interview of what happened. You've been on my show to talk about this project over the years. It's been years that we've been talking about this. And this was the foreseeable conclusion that should not have happened this way.
No.
The city has an opportunity to change how they function.
Yes.
They're going to be hiring a new city manager. And let's hope we get a change in the culture
of
City Hall. We need it.
Yeah. Fact-based decision-making.
Yes. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.